WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Governor Spanberger's veto pen is busy rejecting next year's state cannabis market and the latest effort to curb drug prices. Augusta County authorities step up the search for a man missing since early March. And union members urge a General Assembly committee to keep the tax breaks for data centers in the budget. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, May 20th. On Tuesday, Governor Abigail Spanberger vetoed a long-promised legal marijuana market for the Commonwealth. Radio IQ's Brad Kuttner has the details.
Democratic Petersburg Senator LaCherise Aird was none too pleased to learn about Spanberger's veto of her legal weed market bill.
We were all hoping that under a Democratic governor, it would not be a question of whether we would have a retail marketplace, but when we would have a retail marketplace. And today's veto is evident that those expectations were false hope.
Spanberger, meanwhile, was light on specifics as to why she vetoed Aird's effort and instead said, quote, Virginians deserve a system that replaces the illicit cannabis market with one that prioritizes our children's health and safety, public safety, product integrity, and accountability. But Aird said increased criminal penalties and other concerns, if they remain a priority for the governor, could doom a retail market effort in the future, too.
Those will be a non-starter for a future version of this legislation.
But Republican Senator Bryce Reeves, a former narcotics detective who voted against the bill despite positive impacts Democrats had hoped to see the industry make on state coffers, welcomed the veto.
Great. That's great for our youth. It's not all about money. Everything can't be about money. I've been saying we've been doing all the sin stuff. What's next? Prostitution?
The deadline for Spanberger to act on all remaining legislation is Saturday. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Spanberger also vetoed Tuesday the latest effort to curb drug prices. The five-year effort to establish a prescription drug affordability board received its third veto between two governors. The Virginia Mercury reports the proposal had evolved first as a board to set payment limits on drug prices and later as an advisory panel to help ensure that federal drug pricing caps already in place for Medicare recipients are applied to state-regulated health insurance plans. This year, the concept took on a new name, the Affordable Medicine Act, and cleared this General Assembly session with stronger bipartisan support. But it fell short of winning the governor's approval because of its cost and unproven effectiveness. Democratic Senator Creed Eads of Charlottesville, who sponsored the Senate version of the bill, said he was confident that another effort would be made next year to revive the idea and get it signed into law. Dozens of electricians, all union workers who helped build data centers across Virginia, attended a meeting of the Senate Finance Committee on Tuesday. They urged negotiators to keep tax breaks for data centers, a sticking point in the ongoing fight over Virginia's budget. Brad Kuttner has that report.
In order to get those 2,500 jobs, you're talking about 40 additional data centers.
It could be.
With no way to provide the power, the water, and all the other infrastructure.
That's Senate President Louise Lucas during Tuesday's meeting of the Senate Finance Committee. The firebrand Portsmouth area senator was speaking with Virginia Secretary of Finance, former delegate Mark Sickles. Lucas wants to see data center tax breaks, which helped turn Virginia into an internet traffic hub, come to an end in order to fund billions in new state programs and plug holes made by President Donald Trump's federal spending cuts.
I remain committed that data centers who employ very few permanent jobs for a sizable tax giveaway will pay sales tax on computer equipment.
But out in the hallway after the meeting, union electricians, including Dorian Hargrave, who you'll hear first, confronted Senate Majority Leader Scott Saraville on the idea.
I'd like to have this economy bolstered and stay like it is right here in Virginia.
Anything from you? Any response? Immediate response?
No, I was just telling them my grandfather was an electrician. He took a bunch of classes during the Great Depression, and it's what gave him a career. He ended up actually being the lead electrician on the Roanoke Star. If you all know the Star of Roanoke, a job supported my grandfather's entire life, his whole family, put two kids through college, and you know, I probably wouldn't be here if he hadn't.
Senate budget negotiators plan to meet again in late June. No word yet from negotiators in the House. The deadline to pass a budget is June 30th. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
The Augusta County Sheriff's Office is searching for a missing man in the Todd Lake area of the George Washington National Forest. The Daily Progress reports that a camper and vehicle belonging to 48-year-old Seth Anthony Osgood have been located, but Osgood has not been found. The sheriff's office said he could still be in the area and possibly traveling on a bicycle. Osgood was reported missing on May 13th. He is described as a white man with brown hair and brown eyes, standing 5'10" and weighing 180 pounds. The nonprofit Preservation Virginia released its 2026 Most Endangered Places in Virginia list this week. The biggest item on that list, geographically at least, is the proposed electric transmission corridor stretching over 115 miles and 9 counties from Campbell to Cumberland. The Valley Link Joshua Falls Yeet Line would be built to serve electric demand in Northern Virginia, mainly from data centers. Preservation Virginia says the project could affect 11 historic districts, several battlefields, forests, and other sites. To find WMRE's previous coverage of this proposal, type WMRA Valley Link into your web browser. Republican Congressman John McGuire, who represents much of Central and Southside Virginia, including Charlottesville, has a bill that he says will help federal law enforcement crack down on local crime. Radio IQ's Michael Pope reports.
It's called the FAFO Act. Yes, you heard that right. The Federal Accountability for Felony Obstruction Act, or FAFO. Congressman McGuire says the idea is to expand the definition of domestic terrorism to include property damage and impeding law enforcement and first responders.
Being able to peacefully protest or assemble on the sidewalk or in the county square, everybody's okay with that. When you're blocking roads, impeding first responders, firefighters, ambulances, and police officers and causing property damage because of some ridiculous political ideology, and maybe some people agree with it, some people don't, you've crossed the line.
But that line between maintaining order and silencing speech can be tricky, says legal expert Rich Kelsey.
People should be nervous when the government wants to curtail your ability to protest, and they should be equally nervous when they give either party a legal tool to squelch protest, and that's what this is.
McGuire launched the bill during Police Week, and he says he hopes support from the law enforcement community will help this bill get through the House and Senate and on its way to the president's desk. Michael Pope.
Virginia is preparing for the future of artificial intelligence, but President Trump is looming over its efforts. Dean Mirshahi with partner station VPM News reports.
Virginia's General Assembly tabled most of the AI-related bills during its 2026 session. The main reason for the hesitation? President Trump's executive order threatening to withhold broadband funding from states that regulate the technology. Now, two different state commissions are studying AI tools and how the state can move forward with implementing guardrails. Legislators believe the work will put them in the best position next year, but some questioned Virginia's slow approach and said it shouldn't operate out of fear. At a May 6th Joint Commission on Technology and Science meeting, State Senator Stella Pekarsky, a Fairfax Democrat, was frank about her views.
In my opinion, we failed last session. We failed to pass the chat box protections. We failed to pass protections of deepfakes and AI in our politics and in our campaigning.
The federal government has awarded Virginia an estimated $850 million in broadband funding, but has not yet allocated it.
Dean Mirshahi reporting. Finally today, scientists have been studying movements of fish in Virginia waters for decades. One team from the National Centers for Coastal Ocean Science is in the middle of a 3-year study of two of the Chesapeake Bay's iconic trophy fish, red drum and striped bass. The scientists are looking at how warming waters, extreme weather, and other factors affect the fish's movements in and out of the bay. Radio IQ's Pamela D'Angelo spent a morning with scientists as they collected data at the mouth of the bay.
Okay, talking to it. The status, it says armed, so that means that it's still locked. We can go through and activate it. Click activate, and what that'll do is there's a lug nut on the bottom of the receiver, and once we send this activation signal, it'll turn, and the lug will separate from the receiver itself.
Brianna Cahill is a marine ecologist working for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. She's monitoring a transponding hydrophone, which is an underwater microphone. It's talking to an acoustic receiver anchored to the bottom of the bay, some 30 feet below, that logs data from tagged fish. She's telling it to come to the surface for retrieval.
We're 65 meters away. It's opening. So maybe keep eyes out on the bow. Keep eyes out. We'll see two floats and usually a plume of sediment coming off of it. It's at the surface.
The device is about the size of a liter soda bottle. It's one of 30 deployed around the bay. They've been collecting data from nearly 250 striped bass and red drum tagged in 2024 and 2025. But tagging is not how it sounds. It's actually a surgically implanted transmitter about three quarters the size of a AA battery.
So we just do a small enough incision that we can get the tag in, and it only needs one stitch to close.
Bethany Williams is a research ecologist with NOAA's National Centers for Coastal Ocean Science. Each time a tag fish passes by an acoustic receiver, it pings and transmits data. As part of the Atlantic Cooperative Telemetry Network, they receive even more data on their fish through an exchange among other projects using similar receivers their fish might ping. And there are other collaboratives as well.
So that's part one, right? Tracking the fish and seeing where they go. And then we get all those locations back, and we get the temperature data and the depth data that they were recording in their internal tags at all those points. And then we take each of those points and we overlay them with environmental conditions.
Rapidly warming oceans, ocean acidification, marine heat waves, and extreme weather events are transforming marine ecosystems and potentially the behavior of these fish. This data will help fisheries managers determine how best to keep fish populations healthy and not overfished. Marine biologist Lachlan Seisloff holds the retrieved acoustic receiver.
You can see it's covered in different kinds of fouling organisms. Worms, sea squirts, sponges, oysters, algae. And here's the receiver itself, which is actually wrapped in pantyhose.
Yep, you heard it right. This high-tech equipment uses low-tech protection from the underwater elements.
Please explain why it's wrapped in pantyhose, Rock. Pantyhose just works really well to protect against fouling. And I think the acoustic fish tracking field is keeping the pantyhose industry afloat.
The next acoustic receiver they retrieve doesn't have the technology to release itself, so Lachlan and Brianna will dive into the bay's chilly waters for it. In 6 months, they'll be back for another 5 days to do it all again. From the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay, I'm Pamela D'Angelo.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levinke. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you enjoy your Wednesday.